But it's not the product to copy it, it's to copy to understand the lifestyle and how we can create our own lifestyle, you know.
Layers, the unintentional culture of snowboarding by Nitro Snowboards. For our new movie Layers, we interviewed important people and personalities that contribute to the global community of snowboarding. And since most of these interviews were too long to show in the documentary, and they were so interesting, we created this podcast so you can enjoy them in full length. So strap in and let's go. Let's jump straight into the episode with Eero Etelä interviewing the masterminds of LOX, Reto Gyttner, and Reto Poltera. This time, Reto Gyttner.
All right, I think the first question is going to be easy. Could you introduce yourself and tell me about your history with LOX?
My name is Reto Gyttner. I'm the executive chairman of the company. So I was until last year, I was CEO. Now I have appointed a new CEO, so I can take a little bit more time, you know, to think about new projects, where is the world going, and how you're going to do, where we want to head with LOX, you know, to keep that spirit that we created, or I started to create about 40 years ago, you know, to keep on running. And I have an amazing team, staff with Reto Poltera, with Roger, and with Jos, that they're living that freestyle spirit, that snowboard spirit. And That's very important for LOX because it made LOX also strong.
Yeah. How did you find all these people?
I had the chance, you know, to be in California in the end of 70s because I started over there at UCLA. And I was amazed about the culture when you come from a Swiss mountain, that, you know, when you had a gathering or a fest or something like that, it was always alcohol involved. And when you go to California, it was a little bit more the hang loose atmosphere, you know. And just skateboarding was just invented because up to the 70s, you know, no sports had been invented the last 100 years. And since the 70s, over 70 new sports had been invented, like skateboarding, snowboarding, mountain biking, and all that. And I was fascinated about that, and I was fascinated about the easygoing, you know, the culture. It was not like a hooligan, you know, a fighting, but it was people that were happy, you know, to see when they have done some good tricks or stuff like that. Everybody was applauding, even if he was a competitor or whatever it is. That Californian lifestyle, I really tried to import, you know, a little bit the lifestyle to the Swiss mountains. And at the beginning, it was actually pretty hard, you know, when we started to create, because I always said, you know, the kids, they could snowboard. We had a lot of ski resorts at that time that they didn't want to have, you know, the snowboarders, because in those times you still had the ski lifts. Yeah. They said they're going to destroy, you know, the tracks that you had. And I was always very open. And the beginning was a little bit a fight with the Aborigines, with the locals here. Yeah, we didn't want to have skiing, you know, the snowboarders, they are just smoking pot and whatever it is, and say, hey, come on, you know, they're the kids from the skiers, otherwise they wouldn't come to the mountains. They're not coming from the Marsers from somewhere. And I really loved that kind of lifestyle, because it was the same like in surfing or skateboarding or snowboarding, has a kind of similar lifestyle. And I was passionate about that. And so I imported my first skateboard and went then to university in Switzerland. So I had the very first skateboard, went so to the university, and everybody was looking at the beginning. And 2-3 years later, you know, you also could buy then in Switzerland. That was my first experience action. And since then, I was trying, you know, how to build up, because it is important that that the kids, and I see that now with my kids. I have two young kids and a son, he's 7 years, and my daughter, they're both passionate snowboarders. And I wanted to give that soul and that that feeling of life, you know, to involve them a little bit by that. And I'm very happy it goes to that direction.
Yeah. So you had a really strong vision how you wanted LOX to look like, but how did you actually proceed with that vision? How did you make it happen?
Well, at the beginning, my father, my father was 52. He passed away. You know, he was very young, and I just was at university in St. Gallen and Bern. And then with 25, I had to come back because nobody expected that. And then it was my choice to say, okay, do I want to do that or not? And I was passionate always about the mountains. And so, and then I restarted. And when you come in as a young person or somebody, you know, with 25 years running a company that my father started, actually, so it was way much smaller. And I had always the vision, how we're going to create values for humans. It's not a question of how much cash flow you do, because the cash flow is a result. If you make people happy, and people, I mean, it's your staff first, because the staff are doing the work.
Yeah.
And secondly, the Aborigines, you know, the locals, you have to have the support of the locals, because if you don't have the support of the locals, because all the mountains are owned, you know, by the local community, so you had to convince them. And secondly, you know, who is paying? The only ones who are paying are our customers, you know. If they like it, you know, they're going to pay it. If they don't like it, you don't have any future. And if you're going to do a good work, and you only can do a good work if you had passionate staff, you know, that expresses also, you're not just doing a work, but love what they are doing. And that's, I think it's a little bit the secret of LOX, because, you know, at the beginning was pretty hard, actually, you know, to convince the locals, because they had no clue, they didn't have the chance to be in California or whatever it is, and I loved that lifestyle. And so it's step by step, you know, trying to improve. You know, we had the very first pipe dragon, actually, I bought in Miami at the NSAA, that was the National Ski Area Association. That's the association of all the owners of ski resorts. And there was a farmer who made farming equipment, who made the first pipe dragon. You know, it was a very unique shaper, actually, you know, to make beautiful pipes, because before we made the pipes by hand, you know, it was, and they weren't so perfect like we have now. And then with the super pipe was invented here in LOX. Reto Poltera designed, you know, the radius and all that. And now we are, now snowboarding is more than a lifestyle, you know. It's getting tough competition. You know, when I'm thinking back, you know, our first events we had, it was easy friends coming together and that, and now it's getting more and more professional, you know. Yeah. I loved that time there because this was the lifestyle, you know. Now it's getting, when something gets Olympic, it never changes anymore, you know.
Yeah.
Because when you see, and this is a little bit, loses a little bit the lifestyle, but it's a new generation.
Yeah.
And that's the evolution of the time, and we have to live with it. Even at that time, you know, at the very beginning, I was in the 90s, I was president of the ISF, International Snowboard Federation. We were fighting against the FIS,
yeah,
you know, to be appointed. But I was against, me and Terry Hawkinson were the only ones who didn't want to become, you know, Olympics, because they said it's too early, because when you are Olympics, you don't going to change anything
yeah.
more. But we lost,
yeah.
and now it's there, you know where it is. So with that, you know, snowboarding and this culture actually came, I learned it came from California, you know, Big Bear and all those areas. And then you had the Scandinavian countries, you know, who were very strong on that. And also Switzerland always was quite strong. And so when you look at the LOX team here, we have the best riders in Switzerland, more or less, you know, they all have grown up here in LOX or trained here in LOX, actually. Because we had been one of the only one or very few that really had been always pushing the limits, trying, you know, to make nice parks. And that's not me who can design something like that. You have to have those, you have to have the riders, you have to have people who are passionate about that. And then it's like a racing team or something like that, because it's not only the question to have a good driver. If you don't have good mechanics, aerodynamics, whatever it is, you know, you have to work together, you know, you have to understand, so you can make it like a symphony orchestra or like a sailing boat. It's, you need everybody, and everybody has to be on the same level. Everybody has a different task, and trying, you know, to push the limits, how we can push the limits for at the end, you know, for not only for the fun, but for recreation, because that's a part of our life. We don't just want to work. We also want to, you know, we are living here for working, but we are working for a living. And for me, it's a combination of it.
So if we go way back in time, what were the biggest challenges into making logs what it is today? Because now it seems like this mecca of snowboarding. Mm. Was it hard to convince people to start liking snowboarding and take it serious in the first place?
The kids was not so... This was not the challenge, you know, because they came.
Yeah.
When they heard about logs, you know, they had the freedom to, you know, free style means being free and stylish, how you can create something. The biggest challenge was actually, you know, with my locals.
Yes.
Yeah, because they don't have any money. Why you want to promote that? You know, you have to go to the classical skiing, whatever it is. Why? I mean, the snow is or it's like on water. When you are on water, you can swim, you can sail, you can rowing, or you have a speedboat, something like that. But being out in nature is something of the biggest value human beings can have, you know, being out in fresh air, being out, you know, in physical movement, being out, you know, having a beautiful nature, having good friends and you know, having a good community. How are you going to create that? So it's not everybody who loves that, but we wanted to focus on that. And that was my experience I had in California. If I wouldn't have had the chance, you know, my father didn't give me the chance, you know, to start in California. I don't know if we ever started with snowboarding, you know. I had been at the right time, the right place, and into the right community, actually. And so it started like everything, because it was not planned at the very beginning.
Yeah.
But I was convinced to have my own vision and not just copy what they're doing in St. Moritz or in Davos or in other ski resorts, because we have plenty of ski resorts. We have over 2,000 ski resorts around the world. And I think everybody should have his own, not branding, but his own vision, his own philosophy. When I'm going to Marrakesh, I don't want to see, you know, the same McDonald's shop that I see around the world.
Yeah.
I want to see, you know, the Marrakesh lifestyle. I want to see the Italian lifestyle. I want to see the Swiss lifestyle or the Scandinavian lifestyle or the American lifestyle. But I wanted to create something that not copy-paste. It has... And that's the most important, how you're going to bring the fundamentalist that you have, that the locals are also convinced. And we started, you know, the kids, we had, the community was then growing and growing and growing, and since now, and we never stopped on it, you know. And I had the chance, you know, to be CEO for 40 years, you know. I started then, and now I'm retired, more or less, and I still see that the movement is going on, that the next generation is picking up. And that was my dream, and I'm very happy now to be there. And that's now why LOGS. I mean, LOGS stands, the DNA LOGS is very simple. DNA, that means design, N stands for nature. The fundamental for our existence, you know, comes from a clean, proper universe. If we don't have that, we can't exist anymore, you know. So be aware of that. So that means design nature. So you have to design something that is not competing with the nature. It has to be harmonically.
Yeah.
It has to fit to that. And A means alignment. In which direction? You have thousands of directions you can go. The direction is LOGS. And LOGS means L-A-A-X. L means for liberty. Everybody loves liberty, you know.
Yeah.
to do. We have the chance, you know, to be in the Western world that you can do whatever you like as long as you, I'm not interfering with your liberty. So liberty, I was always fighting for liberty. How you can give the most freedom, the most liberty, you know, everybody can do what, more or less what he likes, you know, with the DNA. Second, A means adaptivity. You have to adapt because the world is changing. We cannot do the same on the same matter as we have done in last century. Yeah. We have to learn about that because the world is changing, you know. It's globalization. And human beings, we all have 1.3 kilograms of brain. So if you are born in China or in Africa or whatever it is, so we have to respect that. It's not a question where you come from, because it's not my fault that I was born in Switzerland, you know. It was a luck maybe to be here, but when I would have born in Africa, I would have a different mindset probably, because I had a different environment. So it's liberty, adaptivity, and the second A is audacious. You know, go a step ahead, you know, having this, not just doing what we should do, but creating, try to look for new endeavors, trying out something. Maybe, you know, you fall down, so then you have to stand up and learning. It's life is a permanent learning, understanding. It's not only knowledge, but it's wisdom, means to understand why the world works like that. And the X stays for exploration, like Hansen, you know, or Vasco da Gama, when they went the first time to the Americas, they didn't know, you know, that what happens over there. Yeah. And so this is, I think it's also in our DNA. People want to learn something, you know. It's a lifetime learning and understanding, not only learning but trying to understand that. And we only have a very small environment or ecosystem, and my goal was always, you know, how can I create work, you know, for my locals here, that they have a living for, and that they have that they're proud of it. And they only can be proud when they have a good product, because nobody is forced to come here, you know. I have 2,000 choices, you know, to go snowboarding, riding, or making my vacations wherever I like. And with that DNA, design, nature, alignment, and then afterwards adaptivity and all that together, are values that is not just a trend. And if you stuck to that always, and you try to teach it, convince them to take people with it, then you can go step by step. But in the end, you cannot say, okay, I'm going to build that. It is always a process, a learning process, doing a lot of mistakes, learning from the mistakes. And that's the result is more or less is now what LOX is, you know, with the Rocks Resort, the best green hotel in the world, like LOX was nominated also again, you know, as the best freestyle resort. That was a dream for me 10 years ago, because then it was only everybody was speaking about the United States. They had the best pipes, they had the best sparks, whatever it is, and say, we challenged them, and we are there, you know. But was only possible, not because of me, it was just feasible because we had a great, passionate team, you know, that had the same vision. Then you can do something, then you can do whatever, you can change the world, because people are changing the world, you know, not the politicians. The politicians have to be elected. As long as you are in democracy, as we have, you know.
So what are the biggest mistakes you have done in these 40 years?
I don't know, I have done a lot of mistakes.
But everybody does mistakes, you know, but like, I mean, just looking at the road now, you know, like if we go back 40 years and where we see LOX now, it's an amazing place. But there must have been some bumps on the road, and what were the biggest challenges and the mistakes you have done?
You know, it's hard to say which one was really the biggest. I've done a lot. But the main question is actually, you know, when you got the problem, don't think about that problem. You have to think, why do we are in that kind of problem? How are we going to solve that? In German, we call that keine Probleme bewirtschaften, Probleme lösen. We have to find solutions. And then you have to place that problem. Why is it like that? And the main question I'm always asking, why are we in this situation? Why are people not happy? Why did we make that mistake? And when you ask that permanently, why is it like that? Who is taking, is it due by the governance we have, whatever it is? Then you have to focus on that and trying to change it. Because nowadays, you know, what is very hard now is thinking we have so much communication is always the most important thing. You know, how are you going to communicate? Before, we only could speak person to person, but now with the social media, you know, you can distribute whatever you like, you know, and it's very hard nowadays to say, is this a fake or is it facts? And we have to learn to cope with that, you know. You don't know if somebody tells, is this really real? Is that reality? Is that the truth? You know, asking what is really the truth. And when you don't know it, you know, and this is the most dangerous thing, then you're going to believe something. How are you going to believe, you know, when I'm seeing the movements of democracy, what happens in the last 10 years? I mean, some of those dictators had been elected democratically. When I'm thinking Turkey, when I'm thinking, you know, to even in Germany 90 years ago, it was not a putsch, you know, a military takeover. It was elected by democracy, and then afterwards. And this is very challenging, and it's very dangerous. You know, we have to be aware of that, because our fundamental is how we're going to keep, you know, the liberty of the people. Because the three most important things, you know, for every human being in the world, he wants to have freedom, he wants to have a clean environment, you know, everybody wants to have that, and he also wants to have that he can personally grow. Every plant, every human being, every life, every tree, if he doesn't grow anymore, it's dead. And so this is the cycle of the cosmos. And understanding that we are so small, actually, you know, and we have to be very, very careful with that, what we are doing, you know. Always not only do everything for fun, but combining, if it's possible to do something for our pleasure, for fun, without harming the nature, without harming other generations. I have to be aware that I only have a right to exist, to live from the fruits that our world gives and not from the substance, you know, to push everything to the next generation. Yeah. This is the biggest challenge we have now. Going back to the question, you know, what's the biggest challenge actually? You have so kind of three circles, circle of concern. Yeah. You know, when I'm reading something about Iraq, you know, what happens down there, or in Afghanistan, you know, it hurts me. It hurts everybody, you know. But we can change it. We cannot change it from here. Why being concerned about that if you can change? Because my lifespan is statistically is 86 years, you know. Yeah. And you will be maybe, you're going to come 100 years, you know, with all the tech, you know, if you don't have an accident or something that. And to be aware of that, you know, life is also, you know, combined with that. And thinking on that, you have to think about the second circle, you know. The big one is circle of concern. That's what happened more or less, you know, in the social media. Oh, have you seen the new car? He divorced with that. And, you know, you don't change. This is just entertainment.
Yeah.
That's okay. I love entertainment also, but not too much. You know, it's always a question, do I want to have an impact or do I just want to consume, you know, just entertaining? The second one is circle of influence. During my lifespan, can I influence something? You only can influence something if you're going to convince your cultural, your ecosystem, you know, the one who takes the decision. I cannot change the rules, because the rules, they also, I have to live with the rules exactly like you, everybody. I cannot steal something, then I'm going to have a problem, you know. So how are you going to convince, how are you going to get the majority take Greta, you know, now you see the movement of they're concerned about the environment. And that's very good, you know, to be concerned about. But we need to have solutions, not only just say, you have to do that. We have to sit in the driving seat and contributing something to a better world, you know. So circle of influence, where is my influence? To have my influence, I have to understand how it works. I need the right people, because everybody has own values, who have the same desires. You have to gather them first. And then second, we have to convince the majority in a democracy, or I have to convince, you know, the majority here in Laax, in our area. If they don't support it, I don't going to build a no lift anymore or something like that. And the third part is also, who will finance that? And financing is always, you're only going to buy a product if you like it, if you love it. Then you're going to spend something about it, you know, with a good conscience. I want to have a good conscience when I'm doing something. The third circle is actually, how am I going to control that? Controlling is not controlling what you're doing. Controlling is steering, you know. How are we going to navigate? How are we going to serve that, to understand that? Because you have to speak differently in this cultural area to the locals than when I would live in Zurich, because they have a different culture down there, or being up in whatever country, you know. When I'm down in Afghanistan, they have other values, because they have primary values to survive first. And we have such an affluent society here in Europe, you know, we can be actually very happy. I don't know if there will be another society that can be so affluent. We have the technology, we have the knowledge, actually, but we have to think way more in a circular economy, you know. How are we going to produce it without consuming, you know, from the resources, because we cannot grow the resources. And understanding that, that's a necessity, but just doing what is a necessity sometimes is not fun. If we can do that, that I love to do that, you know, why not having the challenge to trying to make it, I don't know how to explain that a little bit, with sex appeal. Yeah. It has nothing to do with, you know, appealing. Oh, that's cool. I love that. I can have great food. That's just local food. I don't have to eat here, you know, some garnel and some lobsters and stuff for flying. I love that. Yeah. But I think, you know, then you go to Maine. Then you go to the ocean side, you know. We also have amazing, you know, the creativity when we have, you know, cooks here that can produce with the local stuff. That's what I want to see. Yeah. That's, as I mentioned, you know, when I'm going to go to Marrakesh, I don't want to see, you know, exactly the same like here. Yeah. I want to see their culture. I want to learn from the culture in Asia. I want to learn from the culture in Africa. Then I learn something, you know, seeing all around the world exactly the same. It's no fun. At the end, we are only doing that, you know, creating values for humans. Humans is the locals, is the team, the staff who transforms it, because only the staff can transform it, not money will transform something. You have to be supported by the locals, by your staff. And then getting the money is just the result of it. You will get it, you know, and also our customers. They have to love, you know, to come to Laax. You know, not everybody loves to come to Laax. They say, "Oh, I prefer to go to St. Moritz. I prefer to go. I'm not a rider. I'm not a skier. I don't like snow." Then you're gonna go to the ocean side. I cannot force them. So we have to create a product, a lifestyle, and that's, you have to create something for your body, for your soul, and for your spirit. And this has to be in harmony. You know, when you have that in harmony, like the star system, you know, we think we are so important. And going back to the base is for me very important. And that's freestyle, free, being free, liberty, and style. Make it with style. Make it with a good design. Make it in harmony to the planet. Food style is exactly the same, you know. Food style, how are you going to create good food, you know, with local ingredients? We don't have to make copy-paste things. You cannot do it 100%, but try, you know, to make that, to live that. Then you have health style, because we are more and more, you know, laptop workers, you know. Yeah. We don't need anymore our physics, you know. Maybe in some generations, you know, we have, you know, if the kids, you know, the thump is getting so fast. Yeah. So we are adapting to that. We are adapting to that. So this is a permanently story we are trying to tell, and you have to have a storyline in a part, because the history will tell about do we have done a good job or not, and we have done some mistakes. So mistakes, you need to come back to your initial question. You need to make mistakes, because without making mistakes, you wouldn't grow, and you would be a hero, or you would be a god, you know. And that's the difference between God or whatever it is, you know. We can copy trying to make the best in our potential that we have. And that's not, it's not a question of size. It's a question, you know, the nucleus is always starting, you know, with a very small team. And if people like that team, you know, what they're doing, you're going to grow. Yeah. Then you have fans, you have everything. Oh, I would love to work with you, and not for you, with you.
Yeah, I think that's really important. Actually, the first time I heard about Lox was maybe 20 plus years ago, mm-hmm. when I saw a beautiful photo or a video of Nicholas Müller here in mm-hmm. Quarter Pipe. So what do you think, how important were the pro riders for the success of Lox in the past and now? And now it's different, because like it used to be about the magazines and the videos, and now it's maybe more about the social media. But how do you think that the pro riders still affect the success of Lox?
They had a huge impact, because they were the communicators. You know, when the pro riders said, okay, we love Lox, or had, you know, some beautiful videos shoot today, you know, for riding, whatever it is. That was pictures or stories they were telling, you know. And then you had some ambassadors. Because when I'm telling that, nobody believes that. Oh, of course, you have to tell that you are good. I cannot tell that. Yeah. You know, you always have to have the vision or the view from the outside. Because when you are in the inside, well, not everything looks perfect, but everything goes in a direction that, you know, when you focus on something and you're so severe working for that, then is the danger that you are losing a little bit, you know, the outside view. And that was for me always very important, always visiting the whole world, you know, what is freestyle? Not only just what is snowboarding, what is the culture behind it? It's not just creating a pipe, you know. We had about 7 or 8 different positions, you know, for the pipe. Where we put it, you know, great pipe, it was in the wrong place. But now with the no name, you know, with this area. And this was always a feedback from the riders. We tried to understand why, what is that they love. But the main point that I think was the connection with the pipe shape, is my team who created that, you know, who shaped that, who had the feedback. And they were all riders also, you know. I mean, when you take Jerry with how he shapes it, you know, he wants to make it so perfect, this pipe, you know. And this is all, you know, this is pushing. One is pushing the other one. Why not trying that? Let's try it. Yeah. And enabling and giving that culture, or giving that opportunity, giving that possibility, that when you create or try something new, that's not, no. Show me where it works.
Yeah.
When you always look like that, then you are always benchmarking with something that already exists. Then you're just multiplying. Then it's just copy-paste. Yeah. But people don't want to have a copy. They want to have an original. And what makes the original is always the people, is the staff, is humans, you know, yeah. Because we are social beings.
Yeah.
I don't want to be, you know, in the middle of a desert alone in a pipe. It's no fun.
Yeah.
You know, I want to have some friends, some girls around, some good parties. Yeah. So understanding the lifestyle. And the lifestyle, I was, at the beginning, I was visiting all the ski resorts around the world. But at the end, you know, I didn't learn there the innovation. So then I started to go to the big cities, you know, what's going on in New York, what's going on in Los Angeles, what's going on in Moscow, what's going on in Paris or Milano, because the people out of the cities want to go to the mountains. The mountain people for us is something normal, yeah.
Yeah.
You know, when I have a lot of friends, you know, they come, oh, how amazing. They say, oh, yeah. Yeah, it is amazing because we are used to it, you know. It's in our reptile because we've grown up with that, so it's not an exception. But I'm fascinated when I'm traveling to new countries I've never seen, you know.
Yeah.
How they live, you know, when you go whatever country you can see. Every country has his own mechanism, has his own soul, has his special environment. You know, when you go to the ocean side, you know, it's completely different when you are down in Marseille as when you go to San Diego. You know, yeah. There you have the surf community, and so you have different communities, and that's a beautiful value that we have. We can learn from different cultures, you know, integrating. Oh, that's a good idea, but it's not the product to copy it, it's to copy, to understand the lifestyle and how we can create our own lifestyle, you know. It's when you compare, you know, different cultures, some are very rough. Yeah, I don't speak much, you know, like the Scandinavian culture, yes, very quiet. Yeah. But they have their own lifestyle, you know, it has a value too, you know.
It's and then you go down. It's less talk, more action. That's how.
Exactly. And then you go. And then you go down to the southern countries, they're just talking, yeah. No action.
Yeah, exactly.
So, and both sides have a kind of some amazing things about it. That's the essence.
Yeah. What are the biggest values that snowboarding has taught to you in your life? What makes it so special?
It's the transformation when you think where snowboarding is coming from, you know. Skiing was invented, the Norwegians say they invented it, but it was cross-country skiing.
Yeah.
And when I see some pictures in Turkey, you know, the farmers, when they were up in the mountains with the snow, they just had a wooden plate with a rope,
yeah.
And because they couldn't walk down, so they were sliding down, you know. And when you go back to Hawaii or Maui, you know, the fishes when they went out, you know, with the canoes,
yeah.
For fishing, when they came in, they always tried to surf the waves, you know. Instead of rowing, they tried to ride the waves. And then you had the young generation, they wanted to impress because all the girls were standing on the beach, you know, expecting, are they coming home safe? Do they have enough fishes? And then the good ones standed up, you know, and tried to surf a little bit. And that's 4,000 years ago.
Yeah.
You know, it's always the play. Yeah. Humans always love to play because when you were a kid, when I was a kid, you know, everybody loved to play. And then afterwards, our parents said, no, you have to be strict. You have to learn that. And the schools taught us how to do. You know, we have different cultures. And then we are conditioned not to play anymore. And the older you get, you again are allowed to play. Oh, yeah, he's old enough now, he can do like a kid, you know, something like. And that's very important because this gives energy. You know, human beings with no energy, with positive energy, because you have two kinds of energy. We cannot destroy energy. Energy is there. So it's just a question, have you positive energy or you have those energy vampires, you know? You also have sometimes, you know, people, you know, they're stealing you the energy,
yeah.
And it sucks you down, you know. I hate that,
yeah,
you know.
Hang out with those people.
I don't gonna hang out with those, you know. Before I tried to argue and you, I say okay, let them live. You know, they have their own life, but try, you know, to gather together with good friends that have positive energy, because when people have positive energy, I gonna get also the energy. And you're going to get the energy. If it's, what do you want to hear? No, it sucks, you know. It's no fun.
Yeah.
And you're just consuming life spam. Because I don't have, my life doesn't become longer. So just try to do what you love to do. That what you love to do, you're going to do better than that what you don't love to do, you know. I have to do that is the worst. Everybody has that. We also have to do a lot of things. I don't. So I try, you know, to rationalize that, to minimize that as maximum as possible, that I have things that I can do where you have positive energy. And positive energy you only get from nature and you get from humans. You know, from people you get the energy.
Yeah.
You know, just from a cow, I don't get positive energy, you know, or from a dog. It can help, but I think, you know, I get the energy, you know, from human beings. We're social beings, you know. We're born not to live alone on an island like Freitag and Robinson, you know. Yeah. That's the story. I don't know, it wouldn't be so fun, you know. Yeah. Even if I had it now, more or less now, during COVID time. But then I try to understand why I'm here. Why? How can I do when I'm coming back, you know? How can I do, you know, to do the best out of my life, you know? Yeah. Not just consuming, not just entertaining. I love entertaining too. Yeah. But when you're just doing entertaining from what I'm living, you know, and I want to create something. I love to create something. I love to be... to be together, if we can move something. Yeah. It's great when you can move something.
And snowboarding has been a big part of that, like making most out of your life.
It has been, actually, you know, I was grown up as a skier, because at that time when I started, you know, for skiing, snowboarding didn't exist, you know. It was the fight between Sims and Jake Burton, good friends, you know, I met over there, and I was fascinated about that. Wow, that's cool. I even tried, you know, with grass ski and all that, but it was not, it didn't grow, you know. The other thing was just the freestyle. It's so fascinating, you know, when you have a powder snow like that. Snowboarding is the nicest for me, you know, when you have big powder and then you have this flow. And it's still now, like, I don't know, like an orgasm somehow. Wow. It's not every day you can do that, you know, but when you have now big snow and you can three skiing and three riding, you know, in the forests, the farmers don't like and the wildlife doesn't like it too much, you know. We have to be aware of that. Yeah. But it's always, you know, something fascinating. And snowboarding is like surfing, you know. You use the wave, you have this movement, being in a flow, in a natural flow.
Yeah.
That's it's something of the greatest fascination you can have, you know.
Yeah. To me, Loch seems like a meeting point these days for riders from all over the world. And how important do you think Loch is for the whole snowboarding community these days?
I think we contributed a little bit, you know, to create that movement. So it's not only Loch, it's a lot of other resorts also, you know, who had that passion. So it's like a big machine, you know. We are one tiny rope in it, and maybe an important rope, and we are trying, you know, to help to that movement. And we have great feedback also, you know, from the top riders, and we also support them with the Loch Academy. We started, you know, how to train the kids, that they love to do that, you know. We have a lot of riders here in Switzerland that came out of the Loch Academy, you know, and that we did it completely separately, and Reto Poltera was moving that, and that's great. And we are working together since 25 years. He's already here. He was just starting with the snowboard school, and when he started with a friend, he said, "I would like to make a snowboard school, not just a ski school that also gives some snowboarding."
Yeah.
And the reason was actually, you know, it's with the same suits going, you know, giving snowboard. It was a question of lifestyle, you know. You don't want to have exactly like the skiers, you know, with the tiny dresses and stuff like that. It's another culture. And you have to understand that. And that was pretty obvious, you know. Also, the shop was very important, you know, when the snowboard garage at the time, you know, with Beat Gattiger, who started. He had a shop with about 300 components of different bindings. You know, when you at the very beginning, you had hundreds of different snowboard brands.
Yeah.
You had hundreds of different, you know, systems and whatever it is. And this created that, and there was a consolidation in the market. You know, it was very hard. So it was a lot of people with a lot of passion who did that, but they couldn't survive. They couldn't make a living out of it. At the beginning, you know, we also couldn't make a living out of snowboarding. But I was convinced it was not just making a living out of snowboard, but it was a transformation. It was a transformator that the kids said, you know, the parents were skiers. And I had the problem, this was a big challenge actually, when you ask, you know, that because I was pushing so much or promoting so much snowboard, we don't want to go, you know, the traditional skiers was a little bit, the beginning was like a fight, you know, between snowboarders and skiers. We don't want to have that, you are doing only for the snowboarders. Hey, I'm not doing that for the snowboarders, I'm doing that for the kids.
Yeah, exactly.
The kids love it. They decide if they want to go snowboarding. I cannot decide if they want. But when I'm presenting and they love that kind of playground, it's different than just going with high speed down, you know, like skiing is. It's just a question of speed. Snowboarding was never a question of speed, you know. Speed snowboarding is no fun, you know. It's the movement and whatever it is, you know. It's not a question of it's a question of style.
Yeah.
And that's the expression. Human beings wanted to create some style, you know, some good designs, good architects, good designing, good, I don't know, whatever it is. This is the most valuable thing, not just functional. And to creating that, and that snowboarding helped us a lot because they changed, you know, dramatically the closing at the beginning, you know, the with them hang loose pants, not the tight racing suits, whatever it is. And even skiing was because the shaped skis came actually, you know, from the snowboards. It was not invented by skiers.
Yeah.
They just took the technology. So it's kind of hand in hand, you know. Maybe it was, at the beginning, it was very revolutionary. And I always liked some revolutions. Sometimes you have to make revolutions. It's not just an evolution, the combination of both.
Yeah.
But I always wanted to create values for the young generation, for teenagers, for the kids. Because I had a beautiful, you know, I could grow up like that and could try that. And I wanted to give that somehow back, you know, to the upcoming generations.
Yeah. How would you explain the culture of snowboarding?
The culture is, again, is this liberty, this expression of movement that you are not tied into to the ground. You use your gravity, you have this flow. That's the passion and the fascination, you know. I don't know how you could explain that. I think it's the main thing is not just the sports, it's the combination of people who have the same vision or the same culture or the same desires a little bit, combining. And that's not just in one sport, but it's the lifestyle, you know, it's all together. And my experience was when I was visiting Hawaii, you know, I wanted to go understand, is it the big difference between surfers and snowboarders? And I said, no, they're exactly the same, you know. Even the clothing and you know, it's taken a lot, you know, from the surfers, you know. The hoodies, whatever it is, you know, this culture comes not from the skiers, it comes from the surf community, you know. And then, you know, the snowboard always tried to be a little bit closer to the surf community. But the very beginners, you know, on snowboard, they also had been surfing, you know, or skateboarding.
Yeah.
I don't know how to explain that. It's just a feeling. It's a good feeling. And it still has the fascination and still has the power, you know, to move. And I have the impression, you know, it's picking up again, you know. It was snowboarding was a certain time in some ski areas, it was huge investment to do in snow parks, whatever it is, you know, shaping. When you see the crew that I have here, you know, you cannot charge that on a ticket. So at overall, but they contribute that the parents who are skiers are also coming to Lux, because if you have to pay that infrastructure. You cannot charge that, you know, to the kids. But we have to have that platform. So it's a combination how we bring with a common belief, bring that together. When you see Nicola Müller, you know, who is up here, he's one for me, one of the, you know, his style, how he snowboards is just beautiful to watch.
Yeah. So what do you think, if you think about the current state of snowboarding, how big of an influence has Lax been to it?
You don't have to ask me. You have to ask the rider. You have to ask the customer.
But try to look at it from the outside. How do you see it?
I think we contributed, you know, to the development, to a positive development, and to bringing it on a stage that people are not just love. Yeah, this tiny little community helped probably also to get to have respect. You know. To have, it's not a question of, it's not just snowboarding, it's the culture, it's our generation, it's not my generation, it's the generation of my kids, you know. And that was for me the biggest pleasure I had, you know, when my kids also are getting into it and say, what you daddy did, it's not my interest. And say, oh, they love it.
Yeah.
And that's, I can't, you know, as a parent, you know, it's something nice to see, you know, your kids said, yeah, it's not because daddy has told them, because I put it the first year, you know, my daughter, I put her in on a wiggly board with 15 months. She just could start to walk in 13.
Yeah.
And then there was a man, I could show you the picture. It looks really funny and crazy. And then I thought, okay, now she loves that. And then afterwards, she turned to skiing when she went to school, because all the friends in the school were more skiers, and she wanted to try skiing. But now they're all back, you know, on snowboarding. And that's, yeah. I don't know why, but I think, you know, it's another DNA.
Yeah.
Skiing, you know, it's like on water. You can be a good swimmer, or you can be a good sailor, or everything happens on the water, or you can be a good rowing, kayaking, or whatever it is. It's always the fascination that we have for water or frozen water. It always has been, because this is a fundamental thing that we need water. Snow is only on a frozen form. We need it also to survive. 3 days, no water, we're gone, more or less, if you're not trained. And people always had the fascination for fire, you know, a fireplace. I don't know why. I love a fireplace. I think everybody loves a fireplace, you know, burning, you know, this life. Water, everybody loves that, you know. I don't know. Maybe it's a common understanding of something turned into an action somehow. I don't know.
What do you think makes snowboarding so special if you compare it to, like, let's say tennis or ice hockey, whatever other sport? Like, why is snowboarding so special to you, and why do you believe in it so much?
Because, I mean, being on a peak of a mountain, you know, having this fresh powder, you have these endless couloirs or these endless mountains. You don't have that on a tennis court or on a soccer field or something like that. And snowboarding is not, you are not so dependent, you know. You can have a lonely ride on a mountain and being exactly as happy as when you go with friends and, you know, go riding with friends. But for tennis, I need a partner, you know, who plays with me. And with that sport is always hard, you know. When you are a better tennis player, you are educating him. It's not so fun, and it's always fun, you know. It's challenging if your partner is a better tennis player than you. You know, then you can learn something. But you need, you know, that you are more or less on the same level, you know. And tennis is always like soccer. You need to make goals. You need to make points. And snowboarding, you don't need that. You don't need, you know, to shoot. All those traditional sports, it's always a fight. It's always a competition. And snowboarding at the roots is not a competition. it's a question, you know, who makes a nice style, who makes a nice trick, you know, evolving in tricks. You always creativity, you can create creativity. You can't create creativity on a football thing. You just have to control the ball. And some band are athletes, you know, how they play with the ball. But actually, you know, it's always the same. Look a soccer player 100 years ago, you know, they're way more athletes, they're faster, whatever it is, they control better the ball. Tennis, it's still the same. Golf, it's still the same. It doesn't evolve. But snowboarding, you always have, you know, the opportunity, having banked slalom, you can use all that. What other sport do you have that, you know? You don't have that. Surfing maybe a little bit, you know? You just have bigger and smaller waves, but you try to do the best. I think it's a lot of creativity involved. And look how happy somebody is who invents a new trick, because now it's always everybody wants to create a new trick. You are not limited with one rule 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, because you have the hit, you have things, and then you it's your choice how you're going to combine it. Yeah. You know, if you have a slopestyle thing like that, you can do that, because slopestyle is getting more and more, you know, terrain riding. You know, when you're riding, you know, in the powder somewhere, you're looking what kind of muggles you have, what kind of cliffs you have to jump, you know. It's always this kind combination of adrenaline, you know, and still making a nice design.
Yeah. Because to me, like, when I was younger, I was playing ice hockey, I was playing soccer, I was playing basketball and floorball and all these other sports. And I hated the fact that I had a coach that would tell me which position
what you have
to play
to do, yeah.
And what to do. And then snowboarding filled this freedom, you know, like I would go on the hill on the days that I wanted to go on the hill, you know. And always when I was there for the right reasons. And there was no one certain way how I would have to ride, you know. Like, as you said, the creativity, I think for me that was the... like the coolest part about it, and also the self-expression through snowboarding. And I don't think this really exists in other sports.
I don't know any sport, even mountain bike, you know, downhill. You cannot, because it's always the time, you know, you're going time. When I'm looking, you know, a hockey player, they have exactly rules how they have to play, you know, they have a system, everything is calculated, the trainer says. Football is exactly the same, you know. You don't can express your liberty. You are a good goal setter, or you are a good goalkeeper, or whatever. But snowboarding, you are completely free. Well, not completely, but you have the biggest liberty. And as liberty or freedom, the liberty is a value, a universal value that every kid, every human being wants to have. You know, decision of himself. Is this? I think is the only boards that I know that you really can express that. You just need a board, or even with a skateboard, you need some terrain to do that. You cannot skateboard off mountain or something like that. You know, you need the paved road or something like that, or you need a park. You know, and snowboarding is you just need snow, like in the water, but you have way more variety in snowboarding than you have on surfing. You know, you just have different waves. You can make tricks, whatever it is, but it's always just moving forward. And on a mountain, you can use your terrain. You can choose your terrain. You can choose, hey, let's try something new.
And also, if you compare snowboarding to other sports, I don't think if you're not the absolute best anymore, I think it's really hard to have it as a profession, you know. If you're not making podiums in a tennis tournament, you know, then it's the career is over.
Yeah.
But in snowboarding,
You still can do that.
Yeah. I think that's...
That's a good point. I've never seen it, but you're absolutely right. You don't have to be a professional, you know. Playing tennis just with some friends is for fun, but... can be if you want to make a career, you are top like the top players, Nadal, whatever it is, or but snowboarding, you still can have that passion. I mean, look, Nicola Müller, you know, he was great in thing, but he still loves riding, and you also love riding still. And I think this is a very good point. Yeah. I never thought about that. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, but do you know who Young Dolly is?
Excuse me, no, Young?
Young Dolly. He's one of the riders in Lhotse.
Yeah.
he's a funny character. He has his own way of writing, you know. I think that's a perfect thing about locks, for example, as well, because you have these locks open, but you also have this young dolly drink sexting mini pipe jam, you know, I think. Mm. And that's something for everybody. As you said, locks open is this really high performance, you know, only like...
But we have the rookie, we have for everybody. That's what I said, you know, we need the rookie, you know, for beginners. You know, my kids, they start now, they can't go in a super pipe. And then you have the intermediate course. You have to build it up, you know.
Yeah.
And they have done an amazing job, you know, Reto and his crew and Roger and Jos, you know, what they're doing. Because you can feel that they love it, what they do, you know. That's why... I think they make such a great work because they love what they're doing.
Yeah. And I get the special feeling in locks as well, you know, just walking around the town.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like everybody's here for the same reason. Mm-hmm. They're just breathing, either it is skiing or snowboarding. Mm-hmm. But I think it's like, I haven't seen this in so many places in the world, you know, like even me walking around, they're like, oh, hey, Rattala is here, you know, like, great to see you, I love your style.
Mm.
You know, if you go to another resort that it's not so snowboard influenced, you don't feel that same energy. And I think that's really cool about locks. And I think this is something really special that I've created.
You're right. But when you are into it, you maybe don't really realize that so much, you know.
Yeah.
When you are living here, you see, you know, what I'm looking always, you know, for me was always very important. Do they have a smile in the face or not?
Yeah.
You know, they don't have to say, it's cool. You know, you can feel that when you look into a face of somebody, you know, he loves that because 80% of expression is not what you're speaking is how you're acting, walk to talk. And is it like that? Is it, you know, when riders and snowboarders come in and say, hey, we don't want to have you, and you know, you're here, everybody, you know, everybody's welcome. And this culture of welcoming, you know, it's the only way we can survive.
Yeah.
Making good product, having good riders here, and they're good ambassadors also for us.
Yeah. Thank you so much.
So then I didn't stop speaking there. You just sorry. Hey. Thank you very much.
Thank you all for listening. See you in the next episode. And in the meantime, do yourself a favor. Go snowboarding.